When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our next conversation with Sarah Hanks and Dr. Nancy Ross, we'll talk about their spiritual journeys. Have they stayed active in the LDS Church despite some of these major setbacks? We'll find out more about that in just a moment. I also want to remind you, please subscribe to our website at gospeltangents.com. Click the yellow subscribe button, and you can get the transcript of this and future episodes. Please help support Gospel Tangents and keep the podcast alive. Now back to our conversation.
I know, Nancy, I've followed you a little bit more, and I know you're no longer a member of the LDS Church. Was this kind of the first straw that broke the camel's back?
So for me personally, so I was in the room when Kate found out that she was excommunicated, and then had to like go back to church the next Sunday and teach Relief Society. Mm-hmm. And in my very conservative Southern Utah ward. And that was a very tense moment. And there was that hope piece of my faith, I would say that hope piece broke. Ultimately, in the coming months after that, I was able to rehabilitate my sense of hope, but that happened in a different way. But for me, the end of my participation in the LDS Church really came with the exclusion policy and the leaking of the exclusion policy in November 2015. Mm-hmm. And then it was after that I realized that I really couldn't be part of the LDS Church anymore. And that was an extremely painful thing. I had the strength to kind of pick myself up and go back and teach Relief Society and face a lot of women who had a lot of anger and disappointment with me in the face and teach and stand in that room in front of them and teach the Relief Society lesson, which took no small amount of like courage on my part. Mm-hmm. To kind of, you know, keep trying to claim my space in my ward and do that. And that became increasingly difficult. That became extremely difficult after Kate Kelly was excommunicated. But that was something that I was really committed to doing.
Yeah.
By the time that, you know, I was able to kind of rehabilitate my faith, I was able to find new avenues for me where I could feel hopeful. But by the end of the following year, and after the announcement of the exclusion policy, I just felt like I couldn't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that people don't understand is like that a lot of us, it took a lot of faith to keep going to church. Mm-hmm. After, mm-hmm. and a lot of commitment to keep going to church after Kate Kelly was excommunicated. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Mormon feminists did stop going to church at that time, but a number stayed. Mm-hmm. And that was a great act of faith. And I think people often look at Mormon feminists and think, oh, well, those people don't have faith, or, you know,
they got one foot out the door.
They got one foot out the door or whatever. And it's like, you know, I am still very much a person of faith, even if my faith looks different from what it did that time. But Mormon feminists are people of faith. Sure, there are Mormon feminists who identify as atheists, and that's fine. But like the intense desire that the community had that, and what we tried to foster, or what FMH tried to foster, was like, here's how we can do this and make it work.
Right.
Okay,
right. Like, that was the whole point.
That was the whole point. And I think that that's often that's an expression of faith.
Right.
And that is a piece that gets lost. And the whole kind of Mormon feminist project is like, okay, how do I reconcile my values, my values of equality, my values that say people need to be treated fairly and appropriately, and that all people should have similar kinds of opportunities, and how do I square that with my church, right? And but I want to make that work, and so this community is kind of geared around like helping people make that work. At least at that time, the FMH community, the Mormon feminist community, was like, how do we help people reconcile these things and navigate the difficulties of those tensions, which is very much an expression of faith, which is a project of faith, which is a project of supporting other people's faith, and I think that is something that really gets lost. Is this whole issue of faith. And yes, you know, people go through faith transitions, and one thing that can happen is that people lose faith, but that itself is its own process of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a process of faith. And so, just that has value, and that this community has done a lot to help women navigate Mormonism. And that, you know, it's important to keep pointing out that navigating Mormonism as a woman is actually a really difficult thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's a really difficult thing.
More difficult for some than for others, but there are some things about Mormonism that can present really unique challenges to women, and so it's okay for people to feel like they need a little assistance
in
figuring out, okay, how do I do this? You know, how do I make this all work together?
So you're still affiliated with Mormonism, but not the LDS Church.
Yes, about 18 months ago, I was confirmed in Community of Christ, and I was one of the people that helped to create the group, the little congregation that I belong to in St. George, and I've been doing that ever since, and I'm very happy with that. In many ways, my Mormon feminist experience has really prepared me to kind of claim a faith for myself, that it wasn't necessarily tightly defined by an institution.
Yeah.
And I can't really overstate the importance of my Mormon feminism in the development of my faith,
right,
and in FMH in the development of my faith, because I saw a lot of women wrestling with faith and trying to figure it out. And that gave me the courage to really try and figure it out, including leaving and including finding something else that I could feel was healthier for me, and then pursuing that. And in many ways, in Community of Christ, I don't feel the same tension between my values and my activism and my religious life that I felt when I was LDS. And so that's a very happy thing for me, because I feel like more pieces of my life are in alignment.
I've interviewed John Hamer, but I still don't feel like I know enough about the Community of Christ. Do they still have a Relief Society?
No.
So there's no Relief Society
in
Community of Christ.
Yeah.
So, and I do know they allow ordination of women.
Yep.
Have you been ordained?
I will be on Sunday.
On Sunday. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be ordained to?
The Office of Elder.
Elder, nice. Okay. So is that, compare that to the LDS Church. I mean, does that make you excited, or...
Yeah, I feel very excited about that. There's part of my Mormon baggage that I can't quite get rid of that's also quite nervous and has mixed feelings about that, I think. But I am excited about that. You know, in many ways, my Mormon feminist community, my FMH community, prepared me that my faith journey would be an individual thing, you know, and that our faith journeys take us in lots of different places. The LDS Church is very like belief statement oriented, right? In the Temple Recommend interview, do you believe that Joseph Smith is a prophet? Do you believe that the current prophet is a prophet? And that sort of thing. Community of Christ is more values oriented, so there are shared core values.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, often people think that Community of Christ is just like the LDS Church, but liberal, and that's not really true. Community of Christ isn't...
John Hamer has said that.
Yeah.
John Hamer.
No, we love John.
No,
John's awesome.
But that's not how I see it. I see it as it's more organized around shared core values and, you know, finding ways to live into those shared core values with a restoration heritage. And yes, it's messy, and, you know, it's very much a work in progress, and it's a church that really embraces its sense of continuing revelation, and so it feels like there's a lot of change in the church, and that happens much more rapidly than perhaps in the LDS church. But ultimately, I see that as a good and exciting thing, and I want to be kind of part of that dynamic, figuring out what God is doing in the world today, kind of business, and that's good for me. But I can't really overstate the way in which my Mormon feminism, like, it helped me get to that place, and then I was able to investigate Community of Christ, and then I was like, okay, here's where I am, here's where I kind of was brought to with Mormon feminism, and now Community of Christ can mentor me in that in that spiritual direction, and for me that's been a very positive thing in my life.
Well, great. Now, you did mention, and I'm going to get to you in just a second, so
please.
I don't want you to think
Nancy's a very interesting person. but
the one question I have is, you know, one of the things you said earlier in the interview was this issue about menstruating women and temple baptism. So I know the temple is a big part of your Mormon heritage.
Yes.
It's very different in the community, correct?
It's very different. They don't do temple like LDS people do temple. So there's the Kirtland Temple. The Community of Christ owns the Kirtland Temple, like a historical restoration tradition temple, and also their temple in Independence, which is dedicated to peace. And those, you know, there are no temple recommends and more sacred or secretive practices. Those are public spaces, and public spaces for education and for community and worship. And so it's not the kind of LDS concept of a temple.
Do you miss that temple experience? Because it sounds like it was a pretty important part of your life.
It was, but I think as I kind of moved further in my LDS journey and started to see the way in which, and maybe understood more of LDS history and the way in which temple ceremonies and the endowment were connected with polygamy, and I have very strong negative feelings about, you know, the idea of practicing polygamy for me or practicing polygamy in the eternities, and I see those for me as very negative things, and not everyone does, and that's fine, but for me those are not at all attractive. And so the more that I understood that the temple in one way could be read as creating and extending polygamy, even if that's not how it's read exactly today within the LDS tradition, was really not something that I wanted to be a part of. There are also a number of bits in the temple that have been difficult for me. I had a very positive initial experience with the initiatory and felt that that was a wonderful thing when I first went through. But the endowment did trouble me from the first time I went through. I didn't feel like I could communicate any of that to anyone. And it took a long time before I was able to kind of say aloud, you know, this has always made me feel uncomfortable, the idea that I would covenant to obey my husband. Like, nobody ever warned me about the covenant before I went through. And that was like a really big, you know, it's like a big deal. But nobody had said, this is what's going to happen, and this is what you're going to need to promise. Because even in my most faithful, loyal, LDS believing state, that was still going to make me not going to be something I wanted to covenant to.
Right.
So it sounds like you don't miss that part.
I don't miss that part at all. Like, I don't miss that part at all. And that part was at one time very special and very important to me, even with doubts and reservations. But as time went on, the temple just became more problematic and more complicated. So I don't miss that at all. And that's not something that I long for at all.
All right. Well, Sarah, it's your turn.
Okay.
we probably should be talking more about the book, but I'm curious about what has been your relationship. Let's go back to the Kate Kelly, the excommunication, because that's kind of the end of the book.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your journey since then?
Sure. Yeah. So when Kate was excommunicated, it was only a few months after the second priesthood session action, where women requested entrance to the priesthood session of General Conference. And I actually lived really close, just a few blocks from the Salt Lake Temple at the time, and I unexpectedly felt called to join them in that action. That is not like me. Like, I shy away from controversial stuff, like, by instinct. But I felt compelled to join them, and so I went, and I had that experience, and I felt prompted by the Spirit to do that. And all along the way with my Mormon feminism, I felt periodic confirmations from the Spirit that even though this was sort of an uncomfortable place to be or an uncomfortable questions to ask, that it was fitting. And you too. Funny faces in the background, sorry. And so when Kate was excommunicated, I felt, again, surprised. I felt very personally hurt. And I had this confluence. I've never been somebody who has, you know, very vivid dreams, except for certain times in my life. And this was one of those times when I was just having so many dreams centered around, like, attacks on my voice. Like, I don't know if this will make sense, but, like, garden shears at my throat or being choked or just like, and I realized and worked with my therapist at the time to really realize that like the thing that I felt most personally was that I believed a lot of the same things that Kate Kelly believed, and she had been loud about it and I had been quiet about it, which was the only reason that I wasn't facing the same sort of consequences she was. And but also at the same time, there was no way of knowing how loud was too loud. It's all up to bishops and stake presidents and individual wards and dynamics, and there's no knowing when you're going to cross a line that somebody says is too far. And so I felt very scared, and I felt I was having panic attacks whenever I would go to church, and so I felt like I had to kind of take a step back, and I didn't go for a few months. I had intended to not go for longer. I was like, I need to take a break of a year. And I'm such a Mormon girl. I'm such a religiously inclined person that I couldn't even hold to my own like expectations. I went back to church after just a few months and started attending again. And I had a very supportive ward at the time, and I loved relating to the people there. But my journey since then has been, it's just gotten more and more nuanced, and I've had to find a way to relate to the church and relate to my own Mormonism that was very different than how I expected it to be growing up. I fully expected to live the most cookie cutter Mormon woman life you could imagine. I thought that that was what I would do, and I was excited to do it. But at a certain point after my own relationship with God and my own understanding of like morality and goodness and personal values, after all that shifted, it just got to a point where I thought, I don't know how well I fit here anymore. And I don't know how well this supports me. I don't know how well the church supports me and what I need to do, and I don't know how much I can really contribute to the church, you know, being that I don't share a worldview that most of the people I'm worshiping with seem to hold. And so it just got complicated, and I don't have like a clear, you know, I don't have any way to kind of tie it up with a bow and say, and then I decided to join a different church. You know, I haven't done the same thing that Nancy's
done. You have not joined
another church. I haven't joined another church. I'm still Mormon.
You're still active?
I'm not still active. I mean, I'm not entirely gone. I still go sometimes. I have two little kids who also go sometimes. And so it's an in-between phase for sure. I don't know where it'll end up, but I felt like, it was a little over a year ago that I had a very clear impression in a Relief Society class that like the 10 years that I had spent clinging to the cliff face, trying to make it work, that I was okay to let go, and that I didn't need to keep trying so hard to make it work anymore, that I could just be with God and entertain the possibility that God would be with me wherever I was.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Nancy Ross and Sarah Hanks. In our next conversation, we'll talk more about feminism. Is it a road out of the church, or does it help women stay in the church?
And what I needed at that point, what I wanted more than anything, was to see examples of people who had a difficult time with the church for any whatever reason and still stayed, because I wanted to stay more than anything. But I didn't know, you know, looking at my family and my wards, it seemed like everybody was just really comfortable. And so I thought, well, how do I stay if I'm not comfortable and if I have questions, right?
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.